king always took advice from the sages, and sometimes debates were conducted, sometimes questions were asked, answers were given. In this case, King Janaka, he asked a question, three questions, to a sage called Yajnavalkya. So the sage gave him three wishes. When they give wishes, that is, you ask me questions. So that is the wish. That's the greatest wish, to allow somebody to ask questions. So the sage gives him three wishes, and the king asks, so what's the light of man? So the sage says, sun, of course, by its light, he sits down, moves about, works, and he goes home. So when the sun has set, what's the light of man? Moon is the light of man. By its light, he sits down, works, moves about, and goes home. And when the sun has set, moon has set, what's the light of man? Speech. By speech, by its light, he works, he moves, and he goes home. And when sun, moon have set, and speech is hushed, what is the light of man? This must be from my doctor. I will switch it off. I just went for some medical checkup. Maybe he's calling me. Never mind. So when the... Can you just switch it off? I refuse. I don't know. It's not switching
off.
Not
wanting to switch off.
I'm very, very sorry. So
don't worry.
I'm not able to switch.
I think we will just ignore it.
Okay. Yeah, it's switched off. So where was I? When the sun, moon have set and speech is hushed, what is the light of man? He says, it's the soul. Soul is the light of man. Like, again, coming back, that is the core truth. Soul is the light of man. And by its light, he works, he moves about, and goes home. Soul is the light of man. So the whole focus is on soul, the interior knowing, intuitive knowing. It's not something we formulate concepts about God, or we learn about God from books, it is not an intellectual knowledge about God, but it is something which happens within. By knowing oneself, a person knows God. It happens within, it occurs within. So this is what I'm going to present now. So I am going to find some commonalities between Hinduism, particularly the Upanishadic tradition, and Christianity, various traditions within Christianity. For example, medieval mystic tradition has some commonalities with Upanishadic tradition. So can we find some common points? And also, not without mentioning the differences, because Christianity has got something to offer to Upanishadic religion. So Christian understanding of spirit can enrich the Upanishadic understanding of spirit. So as I said, Upanishadic religion is a spirit. So it suggests that the ritualism or the external rituals have come to a saturation point. Now the age of the spirit has begun in Upanishadic religion. So can we find some common points? And what is the difference, Christianity can offer to Upanishadic understanding of spirit? So I'll read the synopsis and then read 10 pages I have. I'll read and we can have some discussion. The synopsis: the Upanishads point to the mysterious, intimate motion of the spirit. The mystery that pervades the universe is present in the innermost self of human beings. In this context, the doctrine of the Holy Spirit as the indweller will play a decisive role in mutual enrichment of Hinduism and Christianity. The Upanishads invites us to discover the fullness of the Spirit in the inner center of inmost being of every human being. While we acclaim that the Upanishadic accent of the inward experience of the divine resonates with many strands of Christian tradition, we do not fail to point out that in the Christian tradition, the spirit is understood within a Trinitarian framework. the inner communion of, or the perichoretic relationship within the members of the Trinity reveals that within Godhead there is communion. Consequently, this enables us to say that when we speak of the indwelling of the Spirit, we are in fact speaking about the indwelling of the Trinity. This perception of a personal, interactive, and intersubjectivity of the Spirit enriches any understanding of the Spirit in impersonal and individualistic terms. Okay, introduction. Hindu theology, and to be precise, the Upanishadic tradition, is much oriented towards spirituality, interiority, self-realization, and a deep yearning to move from the incomplete to the complete, Purnam. The following Upanishadic prayer, found in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 3.8, describes the spiritual longing of the Hindus. Asetoma Sadgamaya, from unreal lead me to real. Tamasoma Jyotir Gamaya, from darkness lead me to light. Mrityoma Amritam Gamaya, from death lead me to immortality. It is to the Spirit that most Upanishadic texts point. What comes through the texts of the Upanishads is the deep yearning to listen to the internal voice of the Supreme Life Force. Hence, in this context, the understanding of the Holy Spirit as indweller and inspirer is a relevant theme to explore. Our aim here is not to offer a new theologomena or to meditate on Christian faith as mere concepts, but to start with the experience of the Spirit, which is at the center of Christian theological tradition as well as Upanishadic tradition of Hinduism. Upanishadic tradition. The Upanishads represent a time when Brahmanic ritualism had reached saturation point and the age of the Spirit began. The Upanishadic tradition is a reaction to an overemphasis on ritualism in religion. Instead of an external religion of rituals and sacrifices, it emphasizes the intuitive and experiential knowledge of Brahman. Thus, it introduced a new worldview in Indian religious thinking. The Upanishads cover several centuries, from 9th to 6th centuries BC, of reflection on the divine, the mystery of being, and the universe. There are about 112 Upanishads, and some of the oldest ones are Brihadaranyaka, Chandogya, and Isha Upanishads. Upanishads literally means to be seated at the feet of the master in order to receive his instruction. They are mainly conversations between a master and a disciple. This teaching is secret and hidden and is a disclosure of certain correspondences which are not perceptible at the mental level, but which a particularly acute buddhi or intelligence or intuition can discern. The central message of the Upanishads is intuition of non-duality of the inner and the inner correspondence between Atman and Brahman. The Supreme Reality is understood to be the deepest mystery of immanence in the human consciousness. The deepest center of the human being, which is Atman, and the deepest center of the universe, which is Brahman, are one and the same. This shows the impossibility of putting in dvanda or in pair God and the cosmos, because the absolute is not simply transcendent but transcendent and immanent all in one. The transcendent dimension forbids monistic identification and the immanent dimension dualistic differentiation. Now, Upanishadic epistemology. The Upanishadic way of knowing is not imparting information or conceptual knowledge. Instead, the aim here is to help the seeker to have an attitude of mind and heart to experience God within. It is realizing the unique presence of the self or the Supreme Spirit within one's own self. This is realizing a secret place within a person, which is called Guha in the Upanishads. In the unfathomable silence, the secret place, in unfathomable silence, God is known. Only in a state of total peace and relaxation, pure receptivity and expectancy, emptied of all thought, desire and volition, a simple transparency will the real be manifested in all its fullness. Brahman is asti, that is, it is. Tad etad iti, it, that is, it. According to Upanishads, intellectual tools cannot help to understand God, but God is known and heard in the heart. One has to be receptive to the unique presence of God within oneself. It's not a question of attaining to the knowledge of God or to the presence of God, but of recognizing, realizing that this presence is. Knowing God within means seeing the relation between God and the world as advaitic. The relationship between God and the world is neither one nor two. It is simply the mystery that God and the world are not two. It is a mystery of unity, ekatvam. Advaita or non-duality means precisely this. Neither God alone, nor creature alone, not God plus the creature, not an ontological oneness. Creature does not become God, or God does not become creature, but an indefinable non-duality which transcends at once all separation and all confusion. Advaita is not an idea, but it is an experience. Abhishikthananda, an Indian theologian, explains, God is adsum, I am present to thee. The human being is also adsum to God in the depth of his being. True wisdom is the experience of divine adsum at the base of my own adsum to myself. In the Upanishads, the term Atman illuminates a close proximity between divine and human. Atman. In the Upanishads, the term Atman is used to designate the self, the ultimate reality that is Brahman. The root word an, that is aniti, from which the term Atman comes, means to breathe, to enliven, to vivify. Therefore, the meaning of Atman is breath, life, life principle, spirit, the vivifier. There is also another opinion that the word Atman comes from the root word at. It is atati, which means to go, to walk, to wander. This indicates movement, the wind or the moving spirit. Hence the Brahman, the Paramatman or the Supreme Spirit is understood as the moving spirit. It's worth noticing that the Hebrew word ruha, the Greek pneuma and the Latin spiritus have similar meanings. They refer to breath, wind, movement of air, God's energy, God's strength, power and dynamic activity. The power is wind-like energy. It refers to the creative and dynamic activity of God. Phrases such as the spirit of the Lord, the wind of the Lord, the breath of the Lord refer to God's activity both at the physical and at the spiritual level. The Ruah of God, of the Lord, inspired the prophets, charismatic leaders and artisans. The Ruah of God was active in liberating the Israelites from the Egyptian bondage. The Ruah is life-giving spirit, breath. It is the source of life. And I have number of verses, Genesis 1, 2, 6, 17, 7, 15 and so on. It is God's own power of creation and the power of life which is communicated to all created things in heaven and on earth. The spirit is the creative and vital energy of all that lives. Atman is also the term used to designate the human self, soul, spirit and individual self. It indicates that which makes an individual to be himself, that is the principle of his essential personal identity. The term Atman is the self-grammatically reflexive personal pronoun. It is the principle which constitutes the reality of the person, his awareness of himself. In other words, the Atman or human spirit signifies the most intimate core of the conscious being at the level beyond the reach of sense or mind. It refers to the interiority of human self and it is the central point of all reality. Similarly, in Vedic understanding, the word Atman means breath or vital essence from which develops the meaning of soul or self. Also, the term prana refers primarily to the source of life within and then to its diffused appearance throughout all the organs of body and mind, which are called prana, or vital breaths in the plural. Here again, it is worth noticing that the Hebrew term ruah also denotes the vital principle in man, his whole psychical life, though usually regarded on its higher side, as the religious origin of the usage would suggest. Ruah is what gives life and personality, and it is what makes a creature a recognizable human being. The term pneuma, and the Hebrew, like the Hebrew nefesh, is synonymous with the human soul or self or person. In Upanishadic thought, Atman as real self is distinguished from the empirical self. The Atman as real self is the source of three major elements of spiritual experience, namely the sense of the real, the presence of awareness, and the extension of freedom. It is the unity of being, truth, and freedom. The empirical self is the sum of one's customary roles, habits, aspirations, values, ideas, ideals, attitudes, and sentiments, which are the deposits of his culture, and those biogenic traits which are reinforced by the mutable and the accidental. The Upanishads give central place to Atman as the real self and speak about the correspondence between Atman as the interiority of human self and the divine self, Brahman. In the Upanishadic understanding, Brahman, the transcendent self, indwells the heart of human beings as Atman. Knowing Brahman is like lightning flash within. The desire to know God presupposes certain knowledge about God and therefore becomes a way of knowing. Knowledge about God is not something intellectually constructed, but rather it is received and experienced. It is knowing through one's own inner self. This is Antar Yatra. Hindu pilgrimages to different sacred places are the symbolic act of this Antar Yatra. Therefore, knowing God does not rely on objective observation, but on subjective experience. The Antakarana, the instrument of inner experience, provides reliable evidence. This is a self-authenticating experience which needs no further proof. It is even said that an objective inner silence is reliable evidence of the knowledge of Brahman. By an objective inner silence is meant unbiased inner silence. It is a particular combination of concentration and detachment leading to an attentive inner silence. This subjective experience can be called intuition or sudden illumination or enlightenment. But this subjective experience does not discard reason, rather it enhances reason. In the Upanishadic tradition, ontology, epistemology and metaphysics are deeply interconnected. In the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, Yajnavalkya instructs his wife Maitreyi, saying that Brahman, the self alone, should be seen, heard, thought and pondered upon. Brahman is the unseen seer, unheard hearer, unthought thinker and understood understander. The indwelling of the spirit and knowing God within, now a Christian reflection. The idea of the indwelling of the spirit is not alien to biblical thought. In Exodus 29:45-46, the liberator of Israel is one who dwells among the people. This theme recurs again in the prophets and in the priestly writings. In the Targums, the Hebrew Shekinah is used to express the immanence of God who indwells his people. According to wisdom literature, wisdom is the imperishable breath in all things. Wisdom is kind, beneficent, all-powerful, permeates all things and holds all things in harmony. Wisdom is the divine mind immanent in this world, guiding and directing all things from within. In the New Testament, in various passages, this idea of God's indwelling presence occurs. John 14:16-17, 23:26, 15:10, 26, Galatians 4:6, 1 Corinthians 3:16, and so on. The relationship between the human spirit and the divine spirit is one of interpersonal communion. Veli Matti Karkkainen explains that by human spirit we mean that aspect of a man or a woman through which God most immediately encounters him or her, that dimension wherein one is most immediately open to God. Although one cannot be very sure in several passages of the New Testament whether the term spirit refers to human spirit or the divine spirit. C.F. de Maul points out that in the New Testament, for example, in 1 Corinthians 2:9-16, the term pneuma is used in reference both to God and to human beings. This indicates the affinity between the divine and human. Moreover, it also suggests that revelation comes to human beings through the spirit. Thus, the spirit stands for both the transcendence of God and God's immanent accessibility to human beings. Further, he points out Paul's emphasis on the innate capacity of humans to receive God. Abhishekta Ananda comments on Paul's use of the term pneuma for both divine, human and divine. Paul shows a disconcerting freedom in his use of the term pneuma. Paul's intuition boldly soars up to the real, caring all too little for the fine distinction of the intellect. At the deepest level of man's spirit is found the Spirit of God by which man's spirit is quickened. At the deepest level of man's interiority, there is the interiority of God, his Spirit, the Spirit which introduces man into the very depths of God. In fact, the Spirit alone can sound and reveal the depth of being, for it is in him that the cycle of being, that is, of God's complete self-manifestation in his own mystery, comes to its term. In Conga's view, Paul uses the term indwelling in the sense of entering into definitive relationship of covenant with God and of enjoying communion with him on the one hand, and on the other of being in a state in which one is the true temple in which God dwells and where he is given spiritual worship. Wheeler Robinson says, if we may use the term spirit to denote our human self-consciousness, the first thing we may say about it is that spirit operates as a unifying center. Further, Robinson points out that the term ruah originally meant desert wind, which carries an element of mystery and power. The term wind refers to upward thirst and to power that is beyond human, which can be called supernatural. It does exhibit the real inclusion of one life within another, in which man loses himself to find himself, and his life is hid with Christ in God. Yet the spirit is distinctly other to the human personality. The divine spirit is a personality higher than our own and includes our own without destroying the content of our self-consciousness. Knowing God within is not uncommon also in the thought of the early church theologians. In the view of Didymus the blind, the Holy Spirit will teach not like those who have acquired an art or knowledge by study and industry, but as being the very art, doctrine and knowledge itself. Augustine spoke about holy restlessness. Our hearts remain restless until they rest in God. We perceive God in our inner self. Augustine's exhortation, do not go abroad, return within yourself. Truth dwells in the inner man. And if you find that your nature is mutable, transcend yourself. Therefore, head for the place where the very light of reason is kindled. Then Meister Eckhart's confession that God is nearer to me than I am to myself. And like Augustine and Eckhart, many other Christian mystics experienced God within. Bernard of Clairvaux speaks of spiritual ladder leading up to God in progression from love of neighbor to love of God. Bonaventure spoke about mind's journey to God. Teresa of Jesus speaks about the inner castle, interior castle. Thomas Merton speaks of the spirituality of the soul. It is in the innermost chamber of the soul perceives God, the soul perceives God, and God perceives God's self. They characterize a kind of infinite passion for God. They find fulfillment only in God. It is mutual knowing between God and soul. This is often known as soul's bridal, mystical bridal with God. We can also say that Upanishadic epistemology shares common ground with the Orthodox tradition of the East. In the Eastern tradition, the understanding is that God is beyond all conceptualization. The knowledge of God is experiential in the most personal sense. The knowledge of God brings about communion with God. Basil of Caesarea speaks about the pneumatological roots of the knowledge of God. The work of the Holy Spirit is interior, it is knowledge from within. The Spirit produces illumination and one discovers God within. According to Gregory Palamas, the knowledge of God is union with God. The apophatic way of knowing leads to union with God. Congar comments that in the Eastern tradition, it is not possible either to know God or to express any positive idea of him. The deepest knowledge of him being purely experiential or mystical. tracing back to history, back into history, Congar points out that spiritual movements from the 11th century onwards reacted to the hierarchical power structures by emphasizing the role of the Holy Spirit. These movements emphasized inner light and spiritual experience as the basis for the daily life of a Christian. All these movements arose, says Congar, because of the lack